Good evening, everybody.
So we'll start with our practice as we usually do, and then we'll continue with the teachings. We've been talking about the Bodhisattva's practice and are just at the point now of starting the description of the six perfections or the six far-reaching practices. So we will begin with them as the teaching. Okay, so let's start with watching your breath for a moment, letting the mind settle down. Space in front, visualize the Buddha surrounded by all the other Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Visualization being made of light, and yourself surrounded by all the sentient beings as far as the eye can see. Imagine that we're leading sentient beings in taking refuge and generating bodhicitta, and in all the other thoughts and feelings that are described in the verses that we're going to be reciting. I take refuge until I have awakened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the merit I create, by engaging in generosity and the other far-reaching practices, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. I take refuge until I have awakened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the merit I create, by engaging in generosity and the other far-reaching practices, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. I take refuge until I have awakened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the merit I create, by engaging in generosity and the other far-reaching practices, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings.
May all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free of suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings not be separated from sorrowless bliss. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free of bias, attachment, and anger. Reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind, and present clouds of every type of offering, actual and mentally transformed. I confess all my destructive actions accumulated since beginningless time, and rejoice in the virtues of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until cyclic existence ends, and turn the wheel of Dharma for sentient beings. I dedicate all the virtues of myself and others to the Great Awakening.
This ground
anointed with perfume, flowers strewn Mount Meru, for land, sun, and moon, imagined as a Buddha plant and offered to you. May all beings enjoy this pure land.
Venerable
holy gurus, in the space of your truth body, from billowing clouds of your wisdom and love, let fall the rain of the profound and extensive Dharma, in whatever form is suitable for subduing sentient beings.
Idam
Guru Radha Mandala Kamiyatayami.
Glorious and precious Guru Guru, sit upon the lotus and moon seat on my crown, guiding me with your great kindness. Bestow upon me the attainments of your body, speech, and mind. The eyes through whom the vast scriptures have seen, supreme doors for the fortunate who would cross over to spiritual freedom. Illuminators whose wise means vibrate with compassion. To the entire line of spiritual mentors I make request.
Tayata perfect teaching as well as I can to all sentient beings deprived of the teaching without taking into consideration personal gain, honor, reputation, and the like. 2, giving fearlessness by protecting frightened sentient beings from the harm inflicted by humans, non-humans, the elements, and so forth. 3, giving materially by providing whatever is appropriate to poor and deprived sentient beings, overcoming miserliness and hope for reward and for maturation effects. In brief, for the sake of all mother sentient beings, may I quickly attain complete and perfect Buddhahood. For that purpose, may I give my body, belongings, and virtues to all sentient beings, without stinginess. Guru Buddha, please inspire me to be able to do so.
In response to request, the Guru, to requesting the Guru Buddha, five colored light and nectar stream from all parts of his body into you through the crown of your head. It absorbs into your body and mind, and because there's a Buddha on the crown of all the sentient beings around you, the light and nectar also absorbs into their bodies and minds. The light and nectar purifies all negativities and obscurations accumulated since beginningless time. Especially purifies all illnesses, spirit interferences, negativities, and obscurations that interfere with correctly training in the practice of the three kinds of generosity. Your body becomes translucent, the nature of light. All your good qualities, lifespan, merit, and so forth, expand and increase. Think in particular that a superior realization of correct training in the practice of the three kinds of generosity has arisen in your mind stream and in the mind streams of others. The practice of generosity consists of developing the intention to give. So really feel that you have that strong, very pure intention without expecting or wanting anything in return. This is the case for all the sentient beings around you as well. So, like the text just said, the practice of generosity is the wish to give. It doesn't mean that we have to be able to fulfill the needs of each and every sentient being, because that's not possible. But having the wish to give and the wish to do that is possible. And developing that wish enables us to be generous when the situation is in front of us and we're able to. So here we're talking about the Bodhisattva's practice of generosity, far-reaching generosity, or the perfection of generosity. And so that isn't just plain old giving, okay? But it's giving that has two special conditions. One is that it's motivated by bodhicitta, which is the aspiration to attain full awakening for the benefit of all beings. And second, it is sealed by some awareness of the emptiness of ourself as the person who is giving, the emptiness of the recipient of the act of giving of the gift itself, and that all these things exist dependent on one another, so therefore they lack independent or inherent existence. So these two factors, the bodhicitta motivation and the wisdom realizing emptiness, the ultimate nature, when those are combined with giving, then it becomes the perfection of giving or the far-reaching practice of giving. Okay? But in regular life, giving, you know, is something appreciated by all people and even animals, whether, you know, people are religious or not religious or secular or whatever faith they belong to. Everybody you talk to says giving and sharing, generosity, in other words, is a good practice. So we all say generosity is good, but actually being generous is another thing. Sometimes we have a lot of ifs, ands, and buts coming in with our practice of generosity. As mentioned in you know, the verse that I recited here, for example, expecting something in return. Yeah, we do something nice for somebody else, and then they better, you know, be nice back to us, otherwise we're not going to help them ever again. Yeah, we expect a thank you, we expect maybe a good reputation out of it. If you're a spiritual practitioner and you're trying to accumulate merit for a good rebirth, and, you know, you're eagerly awaiting the you know, the result of your action of generosity in a future life, as if that's some kind of reward for you. So here we're talking about generosity without all those kinds of strings attached. Mm-hmm. So it's a free action of giving. And that's much harder to do, isn't it? Because kind of the bottom line, I mean, the people really should say thank you, don't you think? Yeah? I mean, if they don't, so they say thank you, how ungrateful they are. Yeah, we never want to help them again if they don't even say thank you. Okay, so, you know, you see where our buttons get pushed. Okay, so let's look at those three kinds of generosity again. In the text that I read, it started with the generosity of the Dharma, and then fearlessness, and then material aid. But I'm going to do it in the reverse order, yeah, because material, you know, either belongings or money or whatever, that those things are the easiest to give. Okay. So, clearly, if we gave everything away, we couldn't survive. So being generous doesn't mean that we give everything away. Yeah? But what we want to do is mentally dedicate everything to others. And then that really helps us. Because if we think, okay, I've given everything mentally to others, yeah, then when somebody comes and asks us for something, it's easier to give it because we've already mentally given it. Okay? If you hesitate at that point, then you see there's a string attached. I didn't really give it. Okay? Also, mentally giving everything to others, even though we don't physically do it, then that's very helpful, because then when we do use things, we think, I'm using stuff that actually belongs to other people, and so therefore I need to use it conscientiously and not waste it. Yeah. So Yeah, anything we use, instead of putting the word my on it, if we put the word theirs or yours or even ours on it, then it changes our relationship to the object. We aren't so possessive of it, so it becomes easier to share, easier to give, and also we're more aware to use it properly, because hopefully we respect other people's belongings, you know, and if we borrow something from someone else, we try and take exceptionally good care of it, even better care than we take of something that belongs to ourselves. Of course, not everybody's like that. They think, if I use something that belongs to somebody else, I can just do whatever I want because it's not mine. And if it breaks, too bad. But, you know, many of us feel, oh, if it doesn't belong to me, then I really have to be careful and use it wisely. And so using our possessions with that kind of attitude, I think, is very helpful. Yeah, because then we don't waste things, and especially, you know, in your family or in the monastery or in your workplace, if you think these things belong to the group, then, you know, they're not mine to do with what I want to. They belong to the group, so I have a responsibility to take care of them well and use them correctly. And this can really relate to our relationship with the environment and caring for the natural world. Instead of thinking, oh, you know, nature is mine to exploit and I have no responsibility for what happens, to think this belongs to others. Yeah, I mean, maybe I have a little bit of ownership, but I'm only one person, and there's, you know, countless other sentient beings that this world belongs to. And so I have to take care of it because it isn't mine to misuse or abuse. It's the property of others. Yeah, so I have to be careful in driving and not drive excessively, only drive when I need to, carpool when I can, because it influences the environment that belongs to others. Okay, I need to recycle. I need to reuse things. I can't have this attitude of just wasting stuff and not caring about it, because it affects the world, which does not belong to me. It belongs to everybody. Okay? Are you ever aware of that when you get in the car and start driving? Yeah? Or do we just get in the car and like, okay, I feel like going somewhere, let's go, without thinking of the, you know, the pollution that's coming about because of it? Okay, so giving materially is the first one. It's important when we give materially that we give only what is beneficial. So we don't give weapons, we don't give poison, we don't give drugs and alcohol. Yeah. So, you know, it's not just generosity, it's generosity of certain types of things that are going to be beneficial for other beings. That's quite important. Otherwise, you could be, you know, bankrolling Al-Qaeda and see yourself as a very generous person. That's not going to work. I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah. So sometimes in the Dharma, they talk of the higher level bodhisattvas giving their body. Yeah. So this is a practice that is actually done only when you're ready to do it. Don't freak out when you read these stories of the great bodhisattvas who cut off their limbs or give their eyes or whatever, and freak out and think, oh, I have to do that. when I'm still very attached to my body. No, we do that practice, you know, when we're ready to, when it's comfortable, when we can see that actually there's nothing about this body that's ours, and there's nothing particularly wonderful in this body that is worth being attached to. And we're going to have to give up this body sometime or another anyway. Okay? Right? Yeah? So, you know, when you have that kind of awareness, then it becomes easier and we can give the body, but not beforehand. Okay. So, you know, with possessions, to give what we're able to, yeah? And again, without expecting anything in return or wanting something in return or counting what the person gives back to us or counting how many times they tell people we're so wonderful and generous, okay? But that just having the action of giving be the reward itself, okay? So that it's just plain delight in giving. Yeah, it's not giving to receive, it's just giving. And then, you know, when we can give with that kind of attitude, then our heart is really quite open and quite free, isn't it? Yeah? When we have expectations, then giving isn't quite as much fun. Okay, what else did I say about giving? Yeah, make sure that the things you give are used in ways that create virtue and not used in non-virtuous ways. So I think it's wise, you know, when you're giving to charities, to make sure that the charities are legal charities and that the funds that you give are used correctly. I think that's just being responsible as a donor. Okay. So, sometimes, you know, giving material things can be quite difficult. We like to think of ourselves as very generous, and we can imagine being generous. And imagining is good, because it's one step in the right direction. Yeah. But often, when the rubber hits the road, the hand stays back here. Okay. So I think I'll tell you my maroon cashmere sweater story, because it's a good example of this. Okay. Well, so I must say, before I even tell you that story, that when I was living in India many years ago, I didn't have a whole lot of money. In fact, I had like $50 to my name and no ticket back to the West. So I was quite poor. And when I would walk to the market to buy my groceries, I would pass these beggars. And, you know, I knew all the beggars because they lived in the community. We all saw each other. And, you know, they would ask for 25 pesa, which in those days was like maybe a penny or 2 pennies. But I couldn't bring myself to give that much, you know, because the mind was saying, if I give, then I won't have. And do any of you have that mind that says, if I give, I won't have? Yeah. So we find it hard to clean out our basement or our closets, because if I give something away, then I won't have it. Yeah, I gave that. I remember giving the assignment when I was living in Seattle. We were having a group talking about this, and everybody had the assignment to clean out kind of either one closet or one chest of drawers, not even your own house, the whole house, but just one thing. And you know, clean it out, take out everything you don't need anymore, and take it to the charity of your choice. And then the next week we met, and it was amazing. Some people didn't even do the assignment. Some people, one lady who thought she was so funny, she was saying, I cleaned out this drawer and I found this t-shirt from when I went to Mexico 10 years ago. And I had totally forgot I had it. But once I saw it, it reminded me of the trip and I couldn't bring myself to give it away. Yeah? So this is like such a good, you know, window into how our mind works. We've totally forgotten we have something. We don't even care about it. If somebody stole it, we wouldn't even notice it was gone. But once we see it, the attachment comes back full force. And even though we haven't used it in the last 10 years, we can't bear to separate from it. Okay? Yeah, you have that situation? Brian was telling me about cleaning out his old house a few weeks ago, and there was a pack rat in it. And then he said, but I was a pack rat too. So it was pack rat meets pack rat. Yeah, and I imagine many of us are like that. Yeah. Okay, so my maroon cashmere sweater story. If you're a nun and you wear maroon, you come to see that maroon is not the color of choice at the department stores every year. You know, in fact, you usually have to wait periods of several years in between if you need anything to be able to get it, because many years maroon is nowhere to be seen. So I was in Japan, and some people there gave me a maroon cashmere sweater. So it wasn't just a maroon sweater, which is always nice and useful, but it was cashmere. So it was soft. Okay. So I really liked that sweater. And I wore it a lot, and it was really comfy. And then in, what year was it? Maybe, I can't remember if it was 94, 95, 96, sometime around there. I went to Eastern Europe and the former Soviet republics to teach. And one day we were in the trip, I was traveling with a translator. We arrived in Kiev in the morning, Kiev, Ukraine, and we were going to take the train to Donetsk that evening. So we had all day in Kiev and didn't know what to do. And so he said, well, let me call my friend Sasha and we'll spend the day with her. So he called Sasha and we went over to see her. She was in her early 20s in those days, I would say. And she didn't have very much. Of course, Ukraine didn't have very much in those days. It was right after the Soviets left. But we were guests, and so she treated us royally. Yeah, she had saved some chocolate for a special occasion. She took it out and gave it to us, and, you know, different special goodies that she had been saving. So we spent a very nice day with her, and then in the evening we were taking the subway or the public transport into the city to the train station. And the idea popped into my head at that time that I should give Sasha my maroon cashmere sweater. And as soon as that idea came into my mind, another part of my mind said, no way. And then there began this little dialogue with, well, Sasha's the right, she's the same size as you. I'll give you the sweater.
No.
Sasha could really use it. She doesn't have very much.
That doesn't matter. You need it too.
Sasha just got done treating you so nicely. It would be nice to reciprocate her kindness.
Absolutely not. You are keeping this sweater. So the whole way to the train station, Sasha and Igor are chatting, and I'm having, you know, the civil war going on inside of me. Yeah, we near the station, and it's like, children, you know, give Sasha the sweater.
No, it's in the suitcase.
Well, you can take it out.
That, no, you can't. You're in the middle of a train. You can't, subway, you can't take out the sweater.
Well, take it out when you get to the station.
No, you don't want to do that in public.
Then do it when you get on the train.
No, because then, you know, the train will start to move and Sasha will have to jump off it and she'll get killed in the process. So we arrive at the station, Sasha goes off and buys us some sweet bread. You know, more of her generosity. And I'm going, children, just give her the sweater. You know? And I couldn't bring myself to give her the sweater. Finally, we get on the train. She gives us the sweet bread so that we aren't hungry on the train travel. And I just go, okay, I've got to do it. So I reach in the suitcase, pull out the sweater, hand it to Sasha, and her face lights up. And I thought, what took me so long? You know? Just watching her face light up like that was worth, you know, 100 sweaters. So, and she managed to get off the train without killing herself. And we went on to Donetsk. And then the next week we came back and the weather had changed. It was a lot warmer. But Sasha met us at the train station in the morning wearing the cashmere sweater. And it was just so sweet. And it was like such a good lesson for me. Like, you know, it brought me so much pleasure to give her the sweater. Yet why did I have to fight with myself to do that? Yeah, it would have been so much easier. Yeah. I should have been like the guys on the train, you know. They were very generous in sharing. Because on the way back, we were sharing a compartment with two men. And I was sick. I had a cold or something, you know. And woke up in the morning, wasn't feeling too well. The train's still going. And the two people we were traveling with had breakfast, vodka. That's how you started, how they started out the day with some vodka. And they said, oh, you're not feeling well, here, have some vodka. And so they were so generous, you know? I mean, well, no expectation of anything in return, no civil war inside themselves over whether I would have appreciated or not. They were just very free and generous with their vodka. And they were actually rather offended that I didn't accept. And tried to tell them that, you know, I don't drink vodka, and, you know, I'm a nun, and this and that. And, oh, that doesn't matter here, especially if you're sick, vodka's good for you. So their generosity really, you know, it was of the wrong object, but that's the way we should take delight in giving. Okay, so the material giving. Yeah. You know, giving whatever we can. Then the second kind of giving is the giving of fearlessness. And so this means helping people, protecting people who are in dangerous situations,
freeing people who are trapped, accompanying lonely travelers. So this is the kind of generosity that is going on in Nepal right now. Okay, the generosity of fearlessness, protecting people from danger, getting them out of dangerous situations, rescuing them, making sure that they're cared for, and so on. Okay, so actually, the earthquake, the help in the earthquake is really an incredible example of people helping other people and the generosity of fearlessness. And then the third kind of generosity is the generosity of Dharma. So this is giving the Dharma, sharing the Dharma. And they say that the generosity of the Dharma is the highest gift. So of all the different things that we can give, sharing the Dharma teachings is the best. Because when you share the Dharma teachings, you're giving people the tools and the knowledge to use to create good karma, to free themselves from cyclic existence. Yeah, and so that knowledge, those tools, in the long term are worth much more than any kind of material aid or even giving fearlessness. So, you know, not everybody can give teachings, but we can say our prayers out loud, do our practices, our mantras, our recitations out loud. Then the animals and insects around us can hear it. In fact, our three kitties are complaining tonight because we're having the teachings here and they want to attend, but they're not allowed in this building because some people have allergies to kitties. We usually have the teachings in the other building. And we make sure the kitties come because that way they get some good imprints on their mind stream, which will help them in future lives. Okay, we can also counsel people using the Dharma. That's generosity of the Dharma. Sometimes friends come to you and they're having some problem, and you can help them by sharing the Dharma, and you don't have to use a lot of Sanskrit or Tibetan or Pali words to do that, because so much of the Dharma is just plain old common sense. And if you share that, you know, people can hear it, and it can really very often help them with whatever difficulties they have. So that's also sharing the Dharma. In Asia, there's the tradition of making donations so that Buddhist books can be given away for free distribution. So that's also generosity of the Dharma. So sharing the Dharma with other people is considered that kind of generosity. Okay. So that's a little bit about generosity. When we are practicing generosity, it's very important to include the other perfections with it. So to practice ethical conduct at the same time we're practicing generosity. So giving in a respectful way, giving only what people can use, you know, to create virtue, things like that, you know, so really maintaining our ethical discipline, giving things that belong to us that we obtained through correct livelihood, not giving stolen goods or, you know, things that we receive by deceiving other people. And then practicing fortitude when we practice generosity. So, because sometimes when we give, other people are not so grateful, and we may get angry at them. Yeah. Look what I did for you, and then you're treating me like this. Yeah, so if we do that, actually we're destroying all of our merit from giving. Yeah, so it's very important not to get angry when we're practicing generosity. Then it's important to
to practice joyous effort and have a happy mind when we're giving. It's important to have the correct motivation and focus on the correct motivation of giving with generosity. I'm giving with bodhicitta, and or at least love and compassion. And then also giving combined with wisdom. Yeah? So seeing that all the elements in the action of giving are interdependent. So in that way, giving becomes very whole, and you know, you have a lot of other virtuous activities incorporated into one act of giving. So it's not so important what you give or how much you give, but the motivation with which we give. Yeah. However, that doesn't mean that you don't give if you have things to give and you just visualize or generate the motivation for it. Did I tell the story of the man? I told it, maybe I was in Mexico last week and I told it, of the person at the initiation. No, okay. So I'll tell you, I must have told it in Mexico. So there's this story the Tibetans love about this man who went to an initiation. And in the initiation, when the Lama gives it, he's always saying, visualize this, imagine this, you know, imagine that, you know, I'm coming and I'm pouring nectar, you know, giving you holy water, or imagine that the deity's coming and filling you up with nectar, or imagine this, that, and the other thing. So a lot of imagining things, okay? And so the man did all of this. He was very grateful. And then there's the custom afterwards to go up and make an offering to the teacher. So different people were going and offering different things. And this man got up to the teacher and he said, thank you very much. You really taught me all about visualizing and imagination, and I followed just what you told us to do. And so now I am also imagining and visualizing giving you an offering. And he didn't give anything, but he just imagined and visualized it. While we do want to imagine and visualize things that we don't have to give, that doesn't mean that we just happily hold on to everything ourselves and constantly rely on visualizing. Okay. Okay. Any questions so far about generosity and practicing it or how to practice it? Yeah?
Yeah, like one thing I feel like just a little bit conflicted about sometimes is, so sometimes I see a person who's either homeless or whatever and they're asking for money, and like there's a part of me that says, oh, you know, just give it to them. What they do with it is their karma. Or I also look at it as like, oh, well, you know, this person is giving me an opportunity to be generous, so just be generous. But then there's another part of me saying, well, there's always that chance of collecting money to use drugs or alcohol. Should I give them? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's that part of me going,
okay,
how do I know what they're going to use through my generosity in a virtuous way or a non-virtuous way?
Okay, so when you're not sure how somebody's going to use your gift, you know, like giving somebody, a street person, something, what do you do? I prefer to give food because everybody can use food. Yeah. So if you know, are walking or working in an area where there just tends to be homeless, carry granola bars or carry fruit and then give that because everybody needs to eat. It's true somebody may sell the food or trade it for drugs, but that's less likely than if you give money. Yeah. So that's what I tend to do.
Mm-hmm. In which category counts giving of time?
Yeah, there's also the giving of time and giving of service. You know, it's not explicitly mentioned here, but it does come in other situations. And that also is very important, yeah, because offering our service, which means offering our time and helping people do things that they need help doing. You know, if somebody's moving, going over and helping them, if somebody needs help cleaning stuff out, if somebody is doing some kind of virtuous project and they need help. So all these ways of just offering service through offering our time is also a practice of generosity, one that's quite important. Yeah. Uh-huh. Two questions on mine. Okay.
The first is, I want to give a lot more, but have limited resources. What's the best way to create the causes to have more to give?
The best way to create causes to have more to give is to be generous, because generosity is the karmic cause that creates the result of wealth. Okay? So I think by giving, then you're creating the karma to receive. If you can't give as much as you wish, then you visualize. Okay? And you imagine giving more.
I've heard that the other's acceptance is part of complete giving.
I didn't hear the first part.
I've heard that the other person's acceptance is part of complete giving. Can you comment on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, for you to give, the other person has to accept. Yeah. Of course, we can't control people accepting or not accepting, but in general, people do. Although I remember one time, I did not accept a gift, and my teacher was there and he scolded me for not accepting. So sometimes the question comes up, if somebody gives you something but you know that they're going to suffer afterwards because they don't have very much and they really need it, yeah, so then do you accept it or not? Because if you don't accept it, they aren't able to create the karma of giving, and also their feelings may be hurt. But if you do accept it, then, you know, they're kind of giving beyond their means and you don't want them to you know, suffer because of that. So in that situation, what I often do is I accept the gift and then I say, okay, I accept your gift. So you create the merit of giving, and I also want to create the merit of giving, so I am offering it back to you. Please accept it. Yeah? And they usually accept it. Yeah. Whereas if I go, no, 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 don't give me, then they push and push, and they feel hurt if I don't accept. But if I really accept it, and then I give it back, yeah, then it kind of works, because actually, I'm quite sincere in wanting to give it. You know, I want them to have it.
What happens when they give you stuff and you don't want it, and you don't like it?
Okay. So people give you stuff and you don't want it, and you don't like it, then you give it to somebody else.
And you take it and with grateful heart and all that.
Yeah, you accept it because the thing that's most important is their care and affection for you. Because very often it isn't the gift that's so important. People want you to know that they care about you, and that's why you give them a gift. So you accept that and you let them know that you receive the gift of their care and affection. And then once it becomes yours, you can do what you please with it. Yeah, there's no obligation to keep it. In fact, my teacher always taught us very well about that, that, you know, not to expect anything when you give, because he would usually turn around and give our gifts away to other people. Yeah. And so you just learn to be fine with that. Hmm? Yeah.
Is giving someone a stronger action than, say, sending a donation?
If you have the chance to put the gift in somebody else's hands personally, that's much better to do. Atisha always taught that, like in terms of making offerings on the altar, instead of having somebody else do it for you, do it yourself, because you're doing it with your own hands. It's better that way. So if you can do it with your own hands, very good. If you can't, then make a donation. Yeah. In any case, you're giving the donation with your own hands, unless you tell somebody else to do it. Okay. Another one?
If we have things that we do not need, but we are not sure if the other party needs it, but we think it should be useful, is this still considered generosity?
Okay, so I got lost there.
So we don't need it, and we're not sure if someone else needs it, but we think it's useful. And then
the idea is to give because you have a heart of giving. Yeah? And if you want to give it to somebody, give it to them. And if they can't use it or they don't like it, they can give it away to somebody else. Yeah? But if you give because you want to give, that's generosity. If you give because I can't stand this and I hope somebody else will take it off my hands, yeah, then it's not total giving, yeah? It's kind of garbage disposal.
Or if you care to share a story about the donut.
The donut. Okay. So, my donut story. So, I had gone to my first Buddhist course the summer of 75. And I came back to Los Angeles very enthusiastic about practicing and, you know, learning more of the Dharma. And one evening I went out to get some donuts for my friend and me. And there was this was in L.A., so there was a guy sitting in the parking lot, you know, kind of like this. And I thought, okay, I'm going to give him a donut, you know. I'm going to be Bodhisattva and give this guy a donut. And so I went over and I gave him the donut, and he took it. And he just went like this and squeezed it and crumbled it, and all the crumbs fell on the ground. Yeah? And I always thought, wow, that was some teaching, you know? Something, I'm still pondering that, you know? Because I think it had some kind of special meaning. You know, like, maybe don't try and be goody-two-shoes Bodhisattva. Yeah, or maybe it was just give and not care about what happens after you give, you know? Belongs to the other person, they do what they want. I wasn't angry at him for crumbling the donut, even though I didn't have very much money and I was rather proud of myself for sacrificing so much to give him something. So you're talking about how to measure how much to give?
Yeah, like it seems to me to be kind of a balance a little bit of like going outside of your comfort zone in giving, so pushing mm-hmm. yourself, but also not giving more than you can. So it's sort of like as we develop, like how to know that or what good internal guides around that.
Whenever I get in that kind of confused state inside myself, I realize that it's usually miserliness working. Yeah. It's not prudence working and saying, gee, I shouldn't give that much because then it would be detrimental. It's usually some kind of miserliness. So I think what I try to go by is when the heart wants to give, give. Yeah. And I've never had the thought of giving everything away, because that would be kind of difficult to do all at one shot. I mean, what am I going to do, you know, say, bring a bunch of boxes and I'll pick up I'll put all of the stuff in my room in these boxes and give it to you? No, you know, it's not that. It's just when, you know, the feeling comes to give, then, you know, because so often I'm trapped by miserliness, then when that feeling comes, I encourage myself just to give.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm hearing Jim's question a little bit, though, you know, with the householder, you know, do you spend the mortgage money, you know, or do you give away the children's college fund? That kind of
well,
thing.
Of course. I mean, you try and be practical, don't you?
Yeah.
But I don't think the thought's going to come up of I'm going to give away the mortgage money. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, I guess I'm thinking, like, if you're in a relationship, you know, will my wife mind, will my husband be upset? You know, sometimes it's that feeling of I might want to.
Okay, but if it's something that belongs to you and someone else, then of course you have to consult with the other person if you think it's going to be something that is going to disturb their mind if you give, because they have part ownership in it. But I don't think too much the idea comes of, you know, I'm going to give away my child's education right now. You know, it's usually, you know, I was going to give 100, but, you know, I can give 200. And, you know, you're not going to suffer from it. Maybe you don't get as many lattes at Starbucks. You have to cut back on your lattes for a month or something. Yeah, but it's very interesting, keep track of how much money you spend on drinks. It's quite amazing at Starbucks and here and there, how much money, come, go, go. So, I don't think people usually think I'm going to give everything away, including the money to feed my children. I don't think that's really what comes in people's mind. What usually comes is, well, if I give it, then, yeah, I won't be able to have that latte. Or if I give it, you know, I really wanted to go to Hawaii this winter, and, you know, I won't be able to stay as long in Hawaii. But maybe I'm wrong. Mm-hmm.
Someone online said, I feel guilty that I'm not able to give as much as I would like to.
That's ridiculous. That's silly to feel guilty. Yeah, because the generosity is not in the amount, the generosity is in the motivation. So if you have a good motivation, then you give what you can. And you imagine skyfuls of beautiful things that you're giving even though you don't have them. That creates virtue as well. But guilt certainly isn't conducive to creating merit.
Like the story of the little boy and the Buddha who had the sand. Remember the little boy offers sand to the Buddha?
Yeah. The King Ashoka in a previous life, He offered, I think, sand to the Buddha, imagining that it was gold, and so he was born as the rich King Ashoka in a future life. So it's really the mind, the motivation, that's the most important thing. Okay? Because we can easily see that somebody can give you know, $20,000, but their motivation is to get their name on a plaque somewhere, or to get recognition, or to get to sit in the front row of some special, you know, activity. And somebody else may give $10, but with a really sincere motivation to benefit others. You know? So the motivation is really the crucial point.
Mm-hmm. It also attracts beings, because I remember the story of a relatively rich person who offered every day to hungry ghost, and then the hungry ghost came and asked him, please hurry, hurry. Why? Because you want not miss another offering from this yogi so-and-so. And he was offering from a little shell, a little walnut shell, the tops of his bodhicitta tears. He used that one, so he benefited how many hungry ghosts of that. So this is a bodhisattva practice, so I was thinking about that.
Okay, anything else? Shall we go on to the next one? Okay, then let's go back to the text. Okay, so then the easy path, okay, says next, for the practice of ethical discipline, while meditating with the Guru Buddha on your head, reflect. For the sake of all mother sentient beings, may I quickly attain complete and perfect Buddhahood. For that purpose, may I, 1, abandon negative actions. Yeah, in other words, give up misdeeds that conflict with whatever precepts I've taken, such as the precepts to abstain from the 10 non-virtues. And 2 is act virtuously. In other words, may I generate in my mind the 6 perfections, generosity and so forth, and the excellent virtue of ethical conduct and so on that I have yet to generate. And may the good qualities that I already have be enhanced. And 3, the ethical conduct of benefiting sentient beings. May I lead all sentient beings to the excellent virtue of ethical conduct and so forth, and establish them in the path of progress and liberation. Guru Buddha, please inspire me to be able to do so. Okay. So this is talking about the 3 kinds of ethical conduct. So the first one is abandoning negative actions. The second one is acting virtuously or wholesomely, and the 3rd is the ethical conduct of benefiting sentient beings. Okay, so in the context of the bodhisattva practice, these are the 3 kinds of ethical conduct. Okay, so ethical conduct, actually, the definition is an attitude abstaining from causing harm to others. Okay, so again, it's a mental attitude. Just as generosity was the intention to give, ethical conduct is the intention to abstain from harming others. Yeah? And so ethics evolves from generosity, because when we aren't attached to our possessions, then we aren't so greedy, and we don't do so many negative actions to procure and protect our possessions. Whereas when we don't practice generosity, then there tends to be more greed in the mind, more possessiveness or miserliness in the mind, and that makes it easier to create non-virtue by stealing other people's stuff or lying in order to get things, embezzling, you know, extortion, all that kind of stuff. What we do to get stuff. Yeah. So you see how it fits in when we look at what goes on in the world with many CEOs and politicians and so forth, yeah, that, you know, even though they have a lot, the mind is quite greedy, and so then it becomes very easy to get involved in all sorts of harmful actions and not have very good ethical conduct, yeah, because of the greed, wanting to get more money or reputation or whatever it is. So, you know, when you see that, then you can see why generosity is practiced first and why that becomes an aid to actually keeping good ethical conduct. Okay, is that clear? Yeah, I understand. Just another little thing about ethical conduct here, or about generosity here, is, you know, you can really see how it's the intention to give and not the amount of the gift if you live in a third world country, because very often people there are very poor and actually very generous, whereas people in this country have much more, but it's often very difficult for them to give. Yeah, I remember very clearly living, you know, in India and being invited to the home of some Tibetan nuns. It was, well, actually it was a Tibetan nun and her sister. They were both elderly. It was one mud and stone hut, and then the roof was, they used to have these big cans for ghee, for melted butter, and so the slats, the roof was cut up ghee cans, okay? And they invited me there for tea, you know, the floor was dirt floor, they had a kerosene stove, which you had to pump up and, you know, was not so healthy, you know, but they didn't have to worry because there was so much ventilation in the room that they weren't going to die from the smoke inhalation. So I remember them inviting me for tea and then giving me kapse, which is this Tibetan fried bread, which again is a big treat for them that they shared with me. And they didn't have very much, and they just shared it very freely. You know, very much just, yeah, of course, this is what you do. And then I remember going back to the U.S. after that and staying with some friends. And as we drove in the car to go out to dinner, and we stopped on the way to at a drugstore, these in the days when you had to have your photographs developed, to pick up some photographs of theirs, as we're driving in the car to do all of this. They're telling me how much they're struggling financially. And I'm going, you know, it's like this very strange experience, because, you know, the people who had nothing gave so easily, and the people who had so much were seeing themselves as poor. Yeah. So it was a very good teaching that really poverty is a state of mind. It's not the state of your wallet. And so similarly, generosity is the state of your mind. It's not how much you give. Okay, so let's come back to ethical conduct. Okay, so the first one is abandoning acting negatively. So whatever level of precepts you have, if it's the five lay precepts or monastic precepts, bodhisattva precepts, tantric precepts, keep them as best as you can and abandon those negativities. They say that there's usually four doors by which we create transgression of our precepts. So the first one is ignorance, not knowing what to practice and abandon, not knowing what our precepts are. Second is carelessness, not caring. Even we may know, but we just, you know, whatever,
you know, I don't care if I create virtue, non-virtue, I'm just going to do what's convenient. Third is lack of respect for ethical discipline. So actually this one is more not caring if you create virtue or non-virtue, just, yeah, not respecting the functioning of karma and the law of karma and its effects in our life. And then the fourth door is having very strong afflictions, so that our afflictions overwhelm our mind and make us act in destructive ways, even though we don't particularly want to, but our mind is out of control. Okay, so we try and counteract those by first learning what our precepts are. Second, by developing conscientiousness, maybe diligence, really caring about the precepts, knowing, and maybe mindfulness would be better, mindfulness and introspective awareness, so that you're really looking at your mind and how you're acting, whether you're creating virtue or not. So that would oppose the carelessness. And then conscientiousness, which is the mind that really respects ethical conduct, that would oppose the lack of respect. And then, you know, learning the antidotes to the various afflictions would oppose having strong afflictions that overwhelm our mind. Okay, so if we pay attention to those four, then we're going to be able to abandon harmful actions, and that's the first type of ethical conduct. The second type of ethical conduct is acting virtuously, and so that means just collecting, you know, doing our practice well, practicing all six far-reaching practices, creating virtue whenever we can through generosity or fortitude or whatever we happen to be doing, really having that intention to create merit. And then the third kind of ethical conduct is working to benefit sentient beings. So this can be either through the four ways of gathering followers, it can be various ways to help different kinds of sentient beings. You may remember when we were going through the Bodhisattva vows, Bodhisattva precepts, that the last group of them had to do with benefiting sentient beings. So if we keep those particular ones, you know, for example, to benefit the sick, to benefit the needy, to help people who are distressed, to help people who have any kind of need for service or time or help with good projects. So, keeping those kinds of precepts of benefiting sentient beings is also a form of ethical conduct. Okay? Those are the three forms of ethical conduct. So we have time for a few more questions and then we'll close for the evening. Anything? Yeah.
So the second and third one seem kind of similar, because not caring could just be, not caring about the, what to abandon could be kind of a lack of respect.
Oh, the which?
The second and third of the
of those factors, of the four doors. One is carelessness. So it's, you may know the 10 destructive actions, but you overlook them in your daily life, so you aren't really mindful about them, you don't pay attention, you're spaced out. And then the third one is lack of respect for ethical conduct, and that's more all this talk of virtue and non-virtue, who cares about that? Okay? Anything else? Yeah?
Paying the kindness of others, and you mentioned once to us monastics that receiving also we lost something that we lost, not never, but yeah, something, I don't know how you say that in English, sorry, today my English is not so good, but something like we are not in debt. Can you remember?
Well, yeah, I remember.
Yeah, thank you.
When we receive things from others, their generosity, we're actually, that's the result of our previous positive karma,
right,
which we are now expended.
Right.
Expended.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so that's true. I mean, because we have so much in our life, and so every time we're receiving, I mean, we're eating food, we're using resources, then that all came about, that all came to us because of generosity that we created in previous times. And so when we receive something, then that good karma is now has brought its result, and it's no longer there. And so that's why it's important to use whatever we receive to create virtue, so that we're not just eating up our good karma during our life, you know, through our own selfishness. I want and I want and I want and give me and give me, without creating any virtue ourselves to be able to receive in the future. And when we don't get what we want, instead of yelling and screaming and blaming, to say, well, I didn't create the cause. Yeah? And so, you know, if we don't get a physical thing we wanted, why not? Well, I didn't. You know, there was times in my life when I wasn't generous, when I was greedy, or when I was miserly, or something like that. And so then that relates, that ripens in our not having what we want or need in our life.
Mm-hmm. Is rejoicing in others' generosity or ethical conduct included in these far-reaching practices?
Is rejoicing at others' ethical conduct or generosity included? Yes, you know, because, rejoicing in general is a way of creating virtue, so it would probably be specifically the second kind of ethical conduct, the ethical conduct of creating virtue. But whenever you rejoice at somebody else's good deeds, then you create the merit as if you had done them yourself. So very good to rejoice at other people's good deeds. Similarly, if we rejoice at their bad deeds, we create the merit. The negativity as if we had done it ourselves. Okay. So, good to think about this in the next week. Maybe try practicing generosity. Do you remember a few years ago we did this, and I asked everybody to bring in something that they really liked and they were really attached to, and I didn't tell you until we all got together that then you had to give it away. Do you remember that? Do you remember what it was that you gave away? Isn't that interesting? You know, we remember exactly what we gave away that day because it was something we were attached to. And do you think about it now? Do you regret having to give that away now?
Sometimes.
Oh!
Yeah, I'm giving them back to you.
You tried that before.
Yeah. So it's an interesting thing to watch how our mind makes a big deal at one time and maybe not at another time. And then comes back and makes a big deal about it again. Yeah? But be careful, you don't want to be a hungry ghost.
No, I don't want to.
You know, craving for those ruby-colored water bowls.
Yes, I remember too.
Yeah, because you made a real big deal about it.
She just pointed to me. I have them now.
Right, you get some different. Okay. Right?
So when I was cleaning out my house, I came across objects that I don't really want them anymore, but I...
What?
You can't... I came across some objects I don't really... Like a big ceramic drum that's really nice artwork. I don't really want it anymore, but I have this attachment to, like, I want to find somebody who wants that, you know?
For sure.
Uh-huh. In fact, I've left it in the house because I have nobody who wants to put that in. Yeah. Has anywhere to put
that. This is some of the difficulty we have with when we sell things is because we have something that we think is a real treasure. And somebody else comes along and says, what is this piece of junk? You know? And we want to sell it to somebody who's really going to appreciate it. Or give, at least give it away to somebody who's really going to appreciate it. Yeah. It's better to give it to Goodwill, and somebody who appreciates it will come along.
I left it in the house.
Okay, so we'll dedicate.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Losam's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase.
Idam
Gurana Mandala Kamiryataya Me.
Due to this merit,
may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their sufferings. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain, pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chinrezi, may you stay until samsara ends.
May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma,
done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the directions, and especially Ashravasti Abbey in the world.